Welcome everyone to Film Ball. That's Andy. I'm Brian Bishop. We are going on a skeleton crew here. Just the little Zoom recorder. So hopefully we sound okay.
Yeah, we might sound a little bit different. Don't zero in on that because not that big a deal. But our big, nice, shiny, expensive board just broke. Just stopped working.
Up and died.
Which is kind of good timing because I've been hating that board for the last few weeks and I want to replace it with a Kyle board eventually.
Kyle board envy?
We're back to our old little Zoom, which I think sounds fine. I think we'll manage with this. The main difference for Brian and I is that we won't be hearing the music in and out, so you don't get to enjoy that sweet, sweet music.
I'll do my best to hit the post anyway during the Amazon read. This episode, paying off top five one-trick ponies with the ladies, the female actresses, one-trick ponies. Most of them on my list are good actresses to some degree, but limited range. Actresses that maybe don't excel in having a ton of range, but they do one thing and they do it well, and they will be reflected on my top five.
And sometimes it's a great thing, much like the guys. Like sometimes they do something really well.
You specialize.
But it's not always well. Sometimes they do the same thing. I got some shit from some people for having George Clooney on there. A number of people are saying, oh, what about old brother, we're out there? He's still being George Clooney. Right. I'm talking about last week now.
Yeah, that was the one I didn't agree with you the most on, but of course otherwise, you know, there's a pretty fruitful list.
Fruitful. All right, so let's just get right into a little, we should mention this. So we just did some production for some of the very, very old 2003 demos that
recording?
I found.
Are we recording right now?
2003 demos, a Film Vault real, what was called Real Beat back then, demos.
It's called Cinebeat.
And Brian was calling it Movie Beat. I was calling it Real Beat. I was way too cool for school. It's cringe-inducing. It's awful. I have a lot of misgivings about posting it, but I'm putting it up on the Patreon
Brave
page.
Move.
Then the Patreon feed on the RSS feed if you're a Patreon member, because I'm a completionist and everything that we ever did, I want to have. So we did four. We're in the middle of our fourth movement, if you want, Brian.
This is like the Beatles anthology. Like they're releasing like early demos, so radio outtakes.
The very beginning was 2003 when you and I sat behind a microphone for like I think seven shows, six of which I found, which I'm posting. And then we moved on to 97.1 where we did it to a small audience for about a year, I think.
Bonaducci and Jack Silver were our audience.
Yeah. And that was a fun period. I really enjoyed that. And then we went to the Orange Couch, the Curl at the Ace Studios, and that was a third incarnation of the show. And I was never comfortable over
That's
there.
That's where we were at our best.
I kind of reverted back to douchey, douchebaggery, defensive.
To get back to the
Anderson.
Good old
and
day.
Then we went independent. So and here we are all these years later, still independent. But so I'm... Almost
we've actually reduced in size. It's just you and me, a Zoom recorder, two microphones.
Which was the way we like it, I think. You know, we don't need all the mucky wuck.
That's right.
We're going to get a producer eventually, but not until I'm done with getting this archive up and running. It's something I've wanted to do for years. So it's taken quite a bit of work to get to where we are now with the first ones, because I had to digitize. And now I got to digitize a few of the 97.1 feed. But we got like 50 of those, I think. And I'm going to put all those up. They're going to be great. So that's where we're at. We just did a little production for a couple of the ones from 2003 because I was embarrassed and I wanted to have modern day us to kind of let people know what they're getting into. But I've listened to all of them, right? I made sure that there's nothing and I didn't have to cut anything.
Really?
And I wanted to make sure. And I even wrote that, you know, we were very homophobic back then. If you think I should cut it, let me know. I haven't heard anything from anyone yet. I like to keep them pure, right? Okay. But there's some funny stuff talking.
Really?
We're talking about. Not funny. It's funny in the sense that, like, I was talking about Troy Duffy, and I was like, I wonder what happened to him. Something happened there. You're talking about who would be the perfect host.
It's pre-overnight.
You're talking about who would be the perfect host for the Oscars.
Okay.
Bill Cosby.
No!
It was pretty good, yeah.
That's pretty good.
But, so it was kind of, I don't want to say fun going down memory lane, but...
It was something.
It was something, yeah. It's funny. It's that thing where people who think they know everything about something usually don't know very much. And the more you learn about something, usually the less you realize you know. Actually, I just heard that in that documentary that I watched recently, Behind the Curve.
Okay. Oh, that's right. The Earth, Flat Earth.
And there's an actual term for that. But it's true. Like, the more I learn about movies, whether it's making them or watching them, the more I realize I don't know about them. And I feel like I know way less now than I thought I knew 2003, which is embarrassing that stuff's... Was this a bad idea? Should I not have posted these, Brian?
There's still time. We can just delete all this. Say, sorry, guys, we lost them. They're lost. The tapes eroded.
So if you are lucky enough to be one of our Patreons, which is only $5 a month, you will be getting those in your feed as early as tonight, all of the very first incarnation of the show. And then by...
Why anyone want to listen
within
to
the next 6 weeks, I will have probably close to 600 separate sound files of this show, all in chronological order, up on the Patreon feed. So
well done.
Yeah.
Organized and uploaded.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Outstanding. You want to confess and flicks?
Yes.
Let's confess the flicks we've seen in the past week. Let's call it flick fashions.
Let's do it.
And Anderson, you see the big movie that came out this week?
No.
You didn't see Shazam?
No.
Oh, shit.
I saw that you did with a terrible lens.
I could do this alone? Was that a terrible lens? Christy did it.
Hi, here's a lens for those of you who didn't see it, which is just a little video that he did once again on the Patreon page. Sorry, we're not trying to make this all Patreon all the time, but Brent and I communicate and I check in during the week on these little videos that are up to 15 seconds long. Brian rarely does them. I try and do them on a more regular basis. But I'm catching on. Brian was standing in a very swanky, bougie theater, IPIC, which is like $25 a seat or something.
It was 32.
It's so absurd.
Not including food.
Brian's like, hey, everyone, I'm just in a very nice, swanky theater about to enjoy Shazam. I was going, oh, dude, everything about this video and everything you're saying is just wrong. It's terrible.
That was my first, I'm overmodulated. Check.
I'm sure you are.
Are we recording, by the way?
What can be done? That joke is tired and old and never funny.
It's coming back from the dead like a vampire. It was my first experience in an IPIC theater. Have you ever been to an IPIC theater?
I've been to Sinopolis, which is very similar, because for a while, that's the only thing the wife wanted to go see.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she wanted to go see the very expensive. It's like a minimum $80 out the door for two people.
It was $32 per ticket. And if you want food or drinks or whatever, then, you know, good luck. I was lucky enough. I'd been over the years, literally 4 years ago, and then last year, been given gift certificates. And I just let them accumulate. And finally, I was like, Christy, let's just go do this.
Giving you those gift certificates?
I think my mom gave me one, and someone else gave me, I don't remember. Oh, a listener. Shoot, his name is Brian. I'm pretty sure. Got him. Mm-hmm. If it's you listening, and it was you, please email me and say that was me, because I have the name was not on it. It was just a gift card. Thank you. So I had $100 worth of gift cards, and that did not cover all of it. There was dinner. The problem with IPIC is
how was Shazam, bro?
The problem with IPIC is that there's a tray not much larger than the size of the laptop that sits in front of you, and they bring all your food at once. Mm. And eating in the dark is a challenge, especially when you're eating something like a Cobb salad like I did.
Why would you order that?
Well, I like Cobb salad.
Just get popcorn and be done with it.
They give you free popcorn. Mm. You can get your money's worth.
Oh, really? Free popcorn?
That is true.
Well, no, it's just built into the ticket. Everyone bought their popcorn.
It's like when we say streaming free on Netflix. Like, no, it's part of, you can watch whatever you want.
Way cheaper than the popcorn, though.
Shazam is a 2019 film directed by David F. Sandberg. He directed Lights Out, which I kind of wanted to see. Did you ever see Lights Out?
No.
You didn't see Lights Out?
I saw it.
Was it good?
I don't remember, bro.
That's not a good sign. And he also directed Annabelle Creation. Did you see Annabelle Creation?
No, but I kind of want to.
Starring Zachary Levi as Shazam, Mark Strong, and Jack Dylan Glazer. Anderson, you would like this. Jack Dylan Glazer was the kid we both loved in It. Mm-hmm. He was the fun one.
Yes.
He was the wacky one.
He's also in Stranger Things.
I don't know what that is. 92% Shazam on Rotten Tomatoes. This is Anderson. Are you going to pay attention? Am I talking to the wind?
I'm looking at the Shazam page.
You shouldn't be looking at Shazam right now.
What was the name of the kid?
Jack Dylan Grazer.
Grazer.
Oh, I agree.
See, aren't you happy now that I'm looking?
Thank you for fact checking me on that. Jack Dylan Grazer, who is excellent at It and is actually excellent in this movie.
No, he's not. I'm sorry. He is not in Stranger Things. Oh. He's not the kid. The kid that was in Stranger Things that was in It was fantastic in It. I think that's the one you're thinking.
No. We like this kid. This was the funny kid. The kid who was actually like legitimately LOL.
Brian, don't say. Let's not.
Do you see who I'm talking about?
I'm looking at him right now.
Do you remember Jack Dylan Grazer from? He was the one with the mom. Who was constantly, not Hudson or proxy. Munchausen my proxy.
Okay, he's also a beautiful boy.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, no shit.
Hmm. All right, Shazam! Exclamation mark. Was it good? Did you enjoy it?
Shazam is Deadpool light. This is Deadpool for 12-year-olds. It's a PG-13 movie, and it feels very PG-13. They don't curse very much. There's not a lot of any blood. There's very little blood. The violence is toned down. It's fun and it's irreverent, but it's definitely made for a 12-year-old crowd. This is like a 12-year-old boy's like new favorite movie. Mm-hmm. There was a family sitting behind us at the IPEC. First of all, families who go to IPEC, you're in for $120. You know what I mean? Like minimum. Like that's the starting price. Family sat behind us with a young girl. She was probably 9 or 10. And the boy who was like 12. Boy was psyched. The kid was psyched. He was into it. Like you could tell. And the little girl, I kept hearing her saying like, can we go now? It was like an hour into the movie. So it is actually, I thought you would have seen this, but it is.
No, why would I see this, Brian?
It's decent, and it was a bit.
You and I have a very different approach to the show. Like I try and think of it as a service.
I'm thinking of it as a service. I'm telling you that if you go into expecting great things, it's 92% on Rotten Tomatoes. So I was like, shit, this could be a great movie. It's not great. It's good. It's fun. It is surprisingly intense at parts for a PG-13 movie. There's a scene that you would like, Anderson, where so Shazam. Do you understand the broad strokes of Shazam?
Yeah, he becomes a superhero. Yeah, it's a kid.
Yeah, it's big, but superhero version. Basically, and it's like the wizard, this grand wizard, is like searching for like someone who's pure of heart who can take over and become Shazam, basically. And he, like, you know, throughout the, you know, history, he's been like, you know, finding people and like evaluating them if they're pure of heart, and the ones that, you know, don't meet the cut, he put them back into their lives. And Mark Strong is rejected as a child, and now that he's an adult, he wants revenge. He wants to get back, and he wants to stick it to that old wizard. And what he does is he unleashes the seven deadly sins as actual like monsters, like they're actual monsters.
I kind of like that.
And at one point, he goes as an adult. Mark Strong goes to his father's boardroom. It's like he's like the jowly, you know, father with the boardroom and everything. You would love it. They're on the board of the high rise,
right.
And he interrupts the board meeting, and he's obviously the ne'er-do-well son, and he's like, "What are you doing here?" He's like, "Father, you've ignored me for long enough," or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And he unleashes the seven deadly sins, and they just tear the room apart. They just kill everybody and throw them out windows and destroy them, eviscerate them. It's a pretty great scene.
What was Gluttony like?
Gluttony was fat.
Uh-huh.
Pride
like?
What was Pride like? A couple of them you couldn't tell, but like Gluttony was obvious. Sloth was obvious. Lust was obvious. He was like very touchy and feely and stuff. It was nice to see DC adopting
Sloth. What was Sloth like?
I feel like Sloth was like a sloth.
Hey.
What?
We've been digressing too much here, but why is pride? It's one of the seven deadly sins, and it's encouraged in society.
I think the idea is that you're supposed to be humble in front of God, and having excessive pride is like putting yourself on a pedestal.
Right, and people are always striving to be proud of themselves.
Yeah.
I the word pride, and I'm not a religious man, but like I've never said that I'm proud of myself.
I think maybe it meant something different in the original translation, you know, in the original Hebrew. I think
we should update that.
Because being proud of your accomplishments
to smug
is probably okay. Yeah,
Brian's going straight to hell. Straight to hell you go.
Smugness. it spends wastes a lot of time laying track. This movie takes a lot of time to get going. It is fun once he turns into Shazam Jack Dylan Grazer is his sidekick. It's a fun movie. It's not great, but if you have a 12-year-old or somewhere thereabouts, take that kid and enjoy your time at the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I closed a window right as you wrapped it up, and that was a wrong window to close. I should have kept it open because I need to talk about.
Notes?
I saw a film, Brian, and it's been out for a couple weeks now. It's not brand spanking new, and it's only limited. So this is one that I want, if you're listening and you trust me, keep an eye out for this, for the Mustang, when it does get released VOD.
You saw this instead of Shazam?
Oh, fuck yeah. Yeah, I've been hearing good things about the Mustang.
Are we recording right now?
This is first-time director Laura de Clermont. Tenore.
It's a lady character.
Tenore. And it's starring Matthias Schoenaerts. Now, you might know that name, and I'm probably mispronouncing Matthias.
Matthias,
perhaps. He is a Dutch-born man, and we know him from Rust and Bone.
Oh.
He's Bullhead. He's in Red Sparrow. He's got a part, and he was great in The Drop as like the weirdo, creepy dude.
Oh, The Drop is great.
He was in a movie that a remake that I actually should not have liked a few years ago, Far From the Madding Crowd. But I saw the original as well as the remake, which he was love interest. I have a thing for this guy. I really like him. He's he's kind of Tom Hardy territory for me. Like I dig this guy, and I've been hearing really good things about this movie. And so it's based on an actual program that exists, Brian, which is they take evidently there's a ton of wild Mustangs,
evidently
wild horses roaming the Great Plains of America,
really?
And it's a problem. And they're constantly rounding them up, and there's controversy, and they slaughter, or I don't know if they slaughter many of them, but the
horses are overpopulated.
A large segment of the middle of the country has these wild horses, Mustangs. And
I'm surprised.
This movie is based around an actual program that is in existence. It's not a documentary, but however, it would make a fantastic documentary, one that I would watch, where they take a cross section, a small section of these Mustangs that they round up, and they take them to prisons, and they have convicts that are handpicked break the horses, and then they sell the horses for the land management department of the country. It opens up with some beautiful shots, and they're not all, you know, it's an indie film, and they're not all like perfect in their splendor. You can tell that it feels like a documentary, where they're actually recording one of these roundups, okay, where there's a bunch of wild horses running the plains, and you see how they use the helicopters, and then they have them all go where they want them to go, and then there's like a funnel, and then they all get put in these pins, and it was breathtaking. So as you might imagine, the movie continues on from there, and it's at a prison. Now we're at the prison where there's probably, I don't know, a dozen horses. And Mateus is he plays Roman Coleman, and he's a very, very troubled.
A violent convict.
Violent convict. Mm-hmm. What I love is I don't think we ever find out what he does.
Okay.
I did have to dip out for like 60 seconds because I really had to pee bad. And I came back, and it was when they're like going around explaining what they're in there for. And I think she used real prison convicts for that. And I didn't see him speak. So he may have right there, but it's implied that, you know, it was something pretty bad. You're thinking murder.
I peed twice during Sam.
I would want to pee the entire time.
I
bet the bathroom is probably
as good.
I
never left my seat.
Brian. So he's in there, and he's making his way, and he finds his way into this program kind of through the back gate. Bruce Dern is the guy that's in charge of this program, and Bruce Dern is he's cooking with fire right now. I like old Bruce Dern. He's killing it. I like him. The dude has been around for so long. He shot John Wayne in a movie.
Jesus.
Right?
Wow,
Bruce Dern's killing it.
He was old in the burbs.
So Bruce Dern is great. He's old and he's crusty and he's, you know, he's no nonsense. And he gets very upset with Coleman at one point for a boxing a horse, essentially. Because he doesn't know anything else. And
like striking a horse.
Yeah, he got in a disagreement with a horse.
I thought you meant like chopping its legs off.
Started boxing it.
Like boxing Helena.
But this is a passion project that gets thrown around quite a bit. But I mean, she spent 5-6 years trying to get this thing made, fighting to get this thing made. And this is her baby. And I'm very interested to see what she makes next. I got to tell you, throughout the movie, you are in there in the pin with him. Some of the subplots didn't really work out and didn't make that much sense for me. That's one of my critiques of this movie.
Okay.
Some of the anger and wild swings and tone didn't really ring true for me.
How many subplots are there? A 90-minute movie.
One, maybe two. Jason Mitchell's also in this. He's not in it enough for my money. I love Jason Mitchell. He's the guy that played Eazy-E. Straight out of Compton. We don't see enough of that guy, but he was fantastic. He was one of the horse breakers in this, and it has such a beautiful, perfect ending, and it had me crying for the last 20 minutes of this movie. And I walked out still, you know, wiping tears out of my eyes.
Because it involved animals?
Perhaps. It was just such a... I think a lot of it had to do with... It's rare that you see a movie where it's like, it couldn't have ended any better. Like, that was just the perfect ending for this movie. I loved it. And it involved Bruce Dern and... So definitely track this one down. If it was streaming right now on, like, let's say Fuckflix or Amazon Prime, I'd be, you know, screaming, try and see this, because I think a lot of you are really going to like it. But if it's in the theater near you, it's definitely worth a few bucks to see in the theater, because it's beautiful, and just Mateus is awesome, and so is Jason Mitchell and Brewster. All right,
The Mustang. I saw a film. I was assigned a film.
Noel is also in this. Hey, real quick, Noel. I hadn't seen him in years, and it's funny. And then he showed up in Dragged Across Concrete a few weeks ago.
Who's
he's the guy that that
is he one of the bank
Mel
robbers?
Gibson was he had his knee on his head.
Oh,
in the beginning on the fire escape.
The guy who sets off the
that's
plunge.
Noel. We mm-hmm. saw him in Training Day. I used to see him quite a bit in different movies, and I haven't seen him in quite some time. Noel
Guglielmi.
Guglielmi. I like that guy. All right.
I know someone named Guglielmi. I saw a film. I was assigned a film.
Oh yes. Yes,
didn't
yes,
take,
yes.
Didn't take a lot of notes, which is often a good sign.
Incendies.
Incendies is a 2010 film. It was a blind spot in my Denis Villeneuve catalog. Denis Villeneuve directed and wrote Incendies, based partly on the life of Suha Bachara, I'm going to say. This is streaming on Netflix, I believe. Is that where I watched it? Yeah, it was on Netflix. That's right. This is a very slow burn. So for the first
a lot going on
half of the movie,
you got to really be
there's
present.
There's a lot going on in there. This is a artfully done movie, an artfully crafted movie, because there was a long time, a good hour or more, where I was like, they sure are laying a lot of threads here. I don't know how these are all coming together. I don't know what they're going to have to do with each other. I don't know why I'm interested in these or if I'm interested in them. Mm-hmm. By the end,
it all pays off.
It was very compelling. This is a movie that sticks the landing. I think there's a movie I would have to watch again to really like sink my teeth into that first half, where it's like, at first I was like, this is kind of taking forever. It's spinning its wheels. But by the end, it sticks the landing and it all makes it very worth it.
Somebody dies.
Right.
There's a stipulation in the will, and a journey is put into motion. And two people or one person?
Well, there's twins.
Twins, right.
Yeah,
the twins
a boy and
go.
A girl, and they're in their 20s. Or, yeah, you're late 20s. And they're adults. And the girl twin, the mother has died, and I'll just lay it out because it happens in the first scene. It's actually kind of compelling. The mom has left two sealed envelopes with the actuary, the executor, mm-hmm. which was her old boss. Her old boss is now her executor of her will, and she says, "Please have my children give one of these to my son, mm-hmm. who they do not know exists, and one of these to their father, who mm-hmm. they've never met." I don't even know how the journey starts, but like basically they have to go.
They go back Middle East.
Yeah.
They go back Middle East.
Where the mom's from.
And they got to find out what their lineage is, what her deal is, how they came to be. And a lot of it is told through flashbacks, if I recall.
It's 70% flashbacks and 30% modern day.
Yeah.
If there's a weakness to this movie, it's that it's overwritten. Like
bit convoluted at times.
A bit convoluted, and almost too many coincidences that make, you know, come together. And if it was in the hands of a lesser filmmaker, it would be like, oh, come on. Like, oh, why, this is over the top, or this mm-hmm. is too much. But because it's a young master filmmaker in Denis Villeneuve, it's very artfully constructed. And I was very invested by the end. There's a big twist/reveal at the end that... there's a lot riding on it. Like this movie fails if it doesn't stick that landing, if that twist or reveal doesn't pay off, because it's very ambitious and it creates a reality that's like, you either buy it or you throw it out the window. There's no like, oh, okay, I can kind of see that. But it's well done. I'm glad I saw this movie. Thanks for assigning it to me. Mm-hmm. You can stream it on Netflix if you want. It's a little over 2 hours.
One of those movies, if you really enjoy movies, you're watching it and you're impressed throughout much mm-hmm. of it. You're just kind of like, wow, this is somebody who's really knows what they're doing.
It's a foreign language film. I don't think it's as good as some of my favorite Denis Villeneuve films. Sicario and Arrival, chief amongst them. But a very good movie, worth seeing, especially if you're a big fan like I am, and this has escaped you. It was nominated for Best Foreign Language Film at the Oscars. It is mostly in French and Arabic.
I saw a film, Brian, 1952.
Oh,
I'm sticking to my guns and trying to. I have to play some catch up because I'm been behind, but I'm going to be watching some of these classics and bringing the ones that I think are worthy. And
damn, son.
And accessible to the film vault. So Umberto D from 1952. It's an Italian.
That's a film.
Neorealist film, an Italian neorealist picture. Brian, this is Ingmar Bergman's favorite film.
Okay.
Claims that he's seen it hundreds of times.
What's Umberto?
Umberto. UMBERTOD.
Okay.
That's his name. It's the lead character's name. This is directed by Vittorio De Sica.
Oh, let's just say that.
Vittorio De Sica, Bicycle Thieves, or actually it's Bicycle Thief or Thieves. It goes back and forth.
I've heard real Italians call it Thieves.
I thought it was the other way around.
Like Bicicletta Lardi.
And then he also did Shoeshine, amongst many, many others. I think he's got 50 credits, maybe 35. I don't know. How many credits you got there, Vittorio?
8.2 on Rotten, or on the old IMDb.
Vittorio is credited with how many? His last picture. He was an actor as well. A lot of these guys back then, they did it all, Brian. Kind of like football. They 35 credits.
Nominated for Best Writing at the Oscars.
1974 was his last film that he directed, called The Voyage.
Oh, wow. Look at that. Came out in 1952, like you said, but nominated for an Oscar in 57. Things worked differently back then.
Much differently. I'm assuming that it had a nice run over in Italy for quite some time. And movies would play in the same movie house for sometimes a couple, two, 3 years. So here's what you need to know about Umberto D. Let me get back to that page, Brian, so I can tell you more about it.
89 minutes. Where do you see this? Where can one track this down?
YouTube is where my buddy Jeff Covey let me know that they have a nice updated version on YouTube, and you can select the closed caption there and get the English closed caption, which is something Brian didn't do when I had him watch Serbian film.
Something horrible. No. Was it that?
Yes.
It was that, wasn't it?
So Umberto
I still got it.
Is played by a fella.
Okay.
Older fella named Carlo Battisti. Carlo Battisti plays Umberto Domenico Ferrari. And he was in exactly one film, Brian, and this is it.
Really?
And he was an older fella during the filming of this.
Was he good?
His co-star, if you can call her that, she's more of a supporting star, played the maid at the house, the apartment that he rented, which is a kind of like a big house almost, and he rented a room in it essentially.
Jesus.
And she was fantastic and very lovely to look at, and she plays a young pregnant maid, and she also had no acting experience. In fact, there was a lot of people in this movie that had no acting experience, as well as a mix with some who actually did. Yeah. So the main storyline is this. Umberto D, he's an older guy. He's retired. He doesn't have much of a pension. It opens up with a bunch of older people marching in the streets, and they're angry because they want their pensions raised and they can't live off of the money, the stipends that they're getting, these retired folk. It's great too, because it takes place in Rome. Movie making was just so much different back then, and you get to see like what it was like. It's the closest thing we had to a time machine. And there's this giant mob, and there's this wide, super wide shot from up high on a crane, and you see this mob going, and you know, they're a little bit almost like ants, and you see a bus coming, and it's coming slowly, but it just kind of like goes into where all the people are, and like it's bumping people, and like it just kind of cuts its way through, like mows them down like corn almost. They don't get run over, but just a different
makes its
time
way through.
Yeah. So it's this Umberto and his dog, and they live in this apartment, and you learn quickly that the evil landlady, who's kind of like she likes to live an opulent lifestyle, and she's like upper echelon, and she's almost like a slumlord, and she just wants him out of there. And he's behind on rent, and he's trying to come up with these different ways to get the rent, and he makes this point not to get evicted. He really wants to live here, and he wouldn't have anywhere to go. He and his dog wouldn't really necessarily have anywhere to go if he did get kicked out. So that's the jumping off point. It's a very, very simply told story of Umberto and his dog Flake. I would have cried if I was in a different mood. I was not in I wasn't in a very soft mood when I watched this. I had a lot on my mind, and I was kind of angry about some things. So, but if I 9 times out of 10 while watching this, I would have cried. There's great little moments where he's got his hand out, you know, because he's gonna try begging because that's how desperate he's got, and he sees this guy that's begging. You know, the guy's saying, "I got 7 dependents, some money, please." And they're fucking rude back then too, like. The guy says, "I got 7 dependents, a little help," and a guy just strolls by and ignores him. "I said I had 7 dependents," and the guy turns around and gives him like a lire.
Wow.
So Umberto's watching all this happen with his dog Flake, and then he goes out and he's like, "I'm going to do it." Like you can see him just trying to work it through and trying to come up with the balls, and he's standing on the corner and he puts his little hand out. And he's just standing there, and a man sees him, and he comes over, and he starts to get his wallet, and then Umberto flips his hand so it's going downward, like, and looks up as though he's like checking the weather to see if it's raining or
sure.
not. Like
he's too much pride.
Little moments like that. It's very good, and it's accessible not only on YouTube, but I think to almost anyone, despite the fact that it's a foreign language film with a story, with a dog, with it being so simplistic and just heartfelt. I really am glad that I saw this. I like all three of the movies. I love Bicycle Thieves. I love Shoeshine, and now I love Umberto D. And it's being remade, but I don't know any of the people that are in it or the guy that's making it, so I don't think it's going to be... I don't think we're ever going to hear of it once it does get remade, but Umberto D.
Umberto himself in one film, like you said, one credit. And he didn't die like the next year. Like he died in 1977.
He was a linguist. He's a professor.
Wow.
Yeah, that was his main gig. And I don't know the story of how they came across him. I should have figured that out before we did this here episode. But I spent the week boning up on A Clockwork Orange because we're going to be doing that.
Oh, is that what we're doing?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I should have
later on, after this episode, actually, we're going to do Sniff Tracks. First one in years. We're going to do A Clockwork Orange. Wow. Very excited.
Nice.
Very excited.
It's going to be pretty exciting. When does it come out? Do we know?
What's that?
When does that come out?
A Clockwork Orange?
Yeah, it's going to be available to people.
When's it? Oh, when? I thought you meant, because it came out in 1971.
It's been out for a while.
I will probably have that up by the time most people are hearing this. It'll be on the Patreon feed. And then, oh, that brings me to this. I'm getting mixed signals here. Some people think it's really gross that we got the Patreon going, and we have, you can get some of the stuff that's on Patreon a la carte for like $5, I think, per like, you know, bonus episode and this and that.
Why would that be
on
gross?
On Gumroad. Because it expires on Patreon, and then if they missed it, they got to buy it. So here's what we're doing for Patreon. Nothing expires. If you're Patreon, you're going to have everything we ever did. You'll have access to that.
Makes sense.
If you don't want to do Patreon for whatever reason, I don't know what your reason is, but a couple people have sent me emails saying, hey, could we buy like maybe like a bonus thing? We're going to keep it at $5 just because we want you to be a Patreon member, because I think you'd enjoy all the extra stuff we're doing. But if you don't want to, I'll make more noise about that once I organize that, and we'll have like say Sniff Tracks. All the Sniff Tracks will be available for $5 a pop if you want to go that road,
right?
Over on Gumroad. Yeah, a la carte thing. Okay. So all right.
No,
yep.
Yeah, I was hoping you'd I really want to talk about The Dirt, but you haven't seen The Dirt.
No, I mean,
are you not gonna see it?
I don't have any interest. I was just bitching to somebody about I'm tired of Rock docs.
Oh, there's a lot more. It's not a doc. It's a feature film.
I know. It's rock movies.
There's a lot more of these coming.
Oh, last night it was during the after disaster. I was yelling at Brian and I mean Michael and Tyler about all the rock of ages.
Oh, yeah.
Rock star. And now The Dirt.
There's gonna be a lot more of these.
Mm.
A lot. Trust me. After Bohemian Rhapsody, like I guarantee, Poison. You know, Brett Michaels on the phone with his agent. Like, get me a movie deal right now. Like, I can tell you, there's gotta be.
Kind tell of me
Roses
this
movie.
Is it worth watching?
Okay.
Wait, because I'll watch it on my own and we can both do it next week if you think it'll lend to a good conversation.
It will. Okay, there's two different questions. It will lend itself to a good conversation. Okay, so here's the thing, Anderson. A lot of people I work with at the Corolla show, people who listen to the Corolla show are like, have you seen The Dirt? What do you think? Is it good? Mm. And it's like, okay. Is cotton candy a good food? Mm-hmm. Is a corn dog a good food? It's satisfying. Well,
it sounds like this is up your alley.
It's enjoyable.
You love those kinds of movies.
None
you of love them. Cheeseburgers. You love them.
Cheeseburger's different. Has nutritional value.
Mm. Not much. The animal has to die.
I'll put it off for one more week. Please see The Dirt.
I'll see if I can.
Okay, it's streaming on Netflix.
Because we're 40 minutes
in. It is very enjoyable. It's satisfying. I don't know that it's good. It has no nutritional value. Mm-hmm. It has no caloric value.
How was Machine Gun Kelly?
Actually, I think he's one of the best parts.
Cool. All right. Okay, we'll do that. I have not even had a chance to watch one single Love, Death, and Robots. And they're like 10 minutes long.
Well, so this is a film program.
I know, but you know what I am doing. So, oh, you know what I did? I had to go visit my mom. She lives out in Palm Desert. Right. I had a few pops. Was drinking during the weekend.
Sure.
I was there with my brother and my... my sister was out there. It was like my family kind of got together. It was nice. Late at night, I was drinking, so I wasn't going to watch anything new. So I started watching the old, I'm rewatching Patriot. I've only seen 7 episodes. So it might be my favorite show of all time. Mm. There's only 20 episodes available, and I've only seen 7 of them. And now I'm rewatching those 7 before I go on to number 8. That's how much I love it. And I'm only doing that while I'm drinking. So I got to step on my drinking. So
I can compensate.
You know what else I watched? Is streaming on the old Amazon. Won't You Be My Neighbor. So I saw that for a second time, and that fucking stands up. Now, I did realize while watching it, perhaps one of the reasons why it impacted me as it did to be my favorite movie of 2018 was because I'm a father now. And I don't know if I would have loved it as much. I think it would have still definitely been top 5 last year, but I don't know if it would have been number 1 if it wasn't me watching Mr. Rogers and thinking about my relationship with my own boy. So that could be part of it. Makes sense. It's still, you know, it gets edgy at times almost, especially with, like, you know, once he dies and they're
Mr. Rogers thing?
Yeah, I mean, I forgot, but, like, it goes into, like, some kind of, like, questionable, not edgy.
It does?
But, well, with the West Memphis church call, you know.
Oh, wow.
And it gets,
oh, I forgot about it that.
And they had his detractors that, you know, talking about how he created all these millennials that think that they're special now. And, yeah, it was maybe better than I even remembered it being.
Wow.
And I cried again while watching it.
I got it back watching
drinking and crying. Crying and drinking. Watching Mr. Rogers do his thing.
The Dirt is kind of like Mr. Rogers.
I don't think it is. All right. Coming up next.
Oh, you're not doing a third film?
No.
Oh.
That's why we're gonna move on to our list of the ladies.
Coming up next.
Don't know notes.
We were going to run down our list of the one-trick ponies. More appropriately, ponies now that it's females. Next. Anderson, by the time people hear this, tax day will be just days away. Are you done?
That's right. I still got to pay my LLC.
I know. I know. Well, yeah.
$800.
Yeah, brutal.
Franchise.
Someone, it reminded me, because someone downloaded TurboTax Home and Business plus State 2018 tax software off our Amazon banner on AndersonandBryan.com. That's actually really good news if you, like, are the kind of person who waits till the last minute. This is obviously last week, but if you're waiting till the 13th or 14th to get those taxes done, download the software. Get it done quick.
Mm-hmm.
Right there off of Amazon.
Monday's the day.
Other things purchased on the Amazon banner on AndersonandBryan.com include, I can't hear any music.
Yeah, because we don't have our board, Brian.
Someone purchased an Apple MacBook Pro 13-inch. Thank you, whoever purchased that. That was a big-ticket item.
That is nice.
And that helps us out a lot. So thank you. Appreciate you making your purchase through us. Someone also got another laptop, an Acer Aspire E15, 15.5-inch laptop. Ubiquiti Unify Nano HD Compact Wave 2 Enterprise Access Point. A Bose wall mount outdoor environmental speakers. Oh, smart. Canon PowerShot digital camera with 40 times optical zoom and 3-inch tilt LCD. TaylorMade M4 driver, golf club was purchased. PlayStation VR Astrobot rescue mission and Moss bundle. And someone picked up an Xbox One S 1 TB console. Industrial portable kitchen island on wheels, sort of a bar cart you wheel into your kitchen. Panasonic microwave oven, Blink XT home security camera system with motion detection, 2 new trailer tires for your, presumably for your car trailer. Water's Choice spa startup and maintenance kit, 3 months supply. Bostitch. 6-gallon, 150 psi oil free compressor. Netgear cable modem, Black & Decker 20-volt max lithium string trimmer / edger, Columbia Women's Newton Ridge plus waterproof ant hiking boot, Razer A5 Lux kick scooter, Amazon e-gift card for $75, LX Tech compatible toner cartridge replacement for Samsung, Midland 50-channel two-way radio with 36-mile range walkie-talkie, Harry Potter The Illustrated Collection, books 1-3 box set, Elasto gel hot cold wrap for your foot or ankle, and a Zinus 3-inch green tea memory foam mattress topper for a twin bed was purchased.
I wonder if that smells nice.
Nailed the post.
Sounds like it would smell nice. I can make it so you nail the post if you like, sir.
That'd be sweet.
Be cool for the rest of the episode. Maybe I'll make that happen.
When the music just starts in the middle.
Here are the movies that clicked through since the last time I saw you. The Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. That might be one of the longest titles in the history of films.
Very long title.
Top five long titles. California Split, a movie I've never seen by Robert Altman from the 70s. Captain America, The First Avenger is a movie I have seen. See, I could have been watching California Split instead of Captain America.
Have you not seen California Split?
James the Giant Peach. Forgot all about that was made into a movie. That was Henry Selick. He's kind of like Tim Burton light. Henry Selick. Carnal Knowledge. I think I might have seen this in Flickfastic, but I can't remember.
I can't remember either.
Jack Nicholson. I need to figure that out. The Mule was clicked through.
The Mule.
It's a fun one. Not a good movie, but kind of fun. Willow was clicked through as well. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Smart fucking move. Die Hard 5 movie collection. All 5 of them. 2 of those are good. Aquaman was clicked through as well as Bumblebee.
I will say that The Dirt is much more fun than The Mule.
Bumblebee. Mule depends on how you look at them. Watch The Mule. If you know it's kind of funny. And not a good movie. It's enjoyable.
That's probably true.
But you're not laughing at it as much as it's just like, yeah, just give over to it.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Thanks for the click-throughs, you guys.
Now back to the program.
Welcome back. Time to count down some one-trick ponies. Mm-hmm. Give the ladies their due. Yeah. These are actresses. I'm looking at my list. I enjoy all these actresses. I think a couple of them are actually legit great actresses. So I'm going to go up one-trick ponies. Not necessarily a criticism. It's simply an observation that while this person may not be gifted in range, the thing they do is excellent. So let's give them their due.
Three of them I absolutely really like, and I'd be happy to see a movie with them in it. One of them I can take her or leave her. It depends on her supporting cast and the tone of the movie. Sometimes, since she's always the same thing, it just doesn't work. And then one of them, she's doing such a thing, and I've been bitching about it for years, that it's just that thing that she does, and it's very self-aware.
Really?
And,
I'm interested.
I'm not really... I want to avoid a movie because she's in it, but yeah.
Okay.
Let's get to
it. Very interested.
Let's get to this.
Now, number five, for me, you want to go first?
I don't care. I really don't care.
Okay. Number five for me.
Mm.
I don't know that she's a great actress, but she's a great movie star.
Mm-hmm.
She's charismatic. She's engaging. She's magnetic on the screen. Drew Barrymore.
Ooh.
Drew Barrymore does not have a ton of range. If you've ever seen her do an accent like she did in Ever After, she attempted a British accent.
Ooh.
And as far as I can tell, never Ever After again after that. She never attempted it again. It was very cringy, very uncomfortable. She also did an accent for a character, a Swedish character named Bjergen Kjergen, but that was an atrocious accent, was played for broad comedy in Wayne's World 2. She's not really much for... anything beyond being Drew Barrymore, but Drew Barrymore is an enjoyable, engaging movie star who I enjoy watching on screen. I like Drew Barrymore. She's likable. Like,
very likable, yes.
You see her on screen and you buy in.
Hey, how about this though? Drew Barrymore in E.T. to Drew Barrymore in Firestarter.
I mean,
she's still playing like little kid Drew Barrymore.
I was completely aware of the fact that it was
this? Little kid Drew Barrymore. And adult Drew Barrymore. Like, she's got some range there.
Very different.
Yeah.
You're telling me adult Drew Barrymore could pull off the scenes with E.T.? I don't think so. Those little girl scenes.
She wanted to fall for the trick, which Spielie actually took. He's like, this is the last time you're ever going to be with this doll. He didn't. He could have eased, softened the blow by saying, "But don't worry, like you'll see him everywhere you go for the next 30 years,
your life.
And you can buy like plush dolls and whatnot. Don't sweat it.
That's pretty good.
I wonder if he stuck to the guns and she's like, "May I please go visit wherever?
Nope,
like he's
I
in the Smithsonian or wherever." Nope, you will not allow, because he's got to be on display somewhere.
She
right?
tries to sneak into like displays and screenings, and he's constantly there.
I like that. I like the premise. All right, number five for me. I still kind of think of as Jennifer Aniston as a TV actor, because I think we all associate her with Friends, but she's in a number of movies nowadays, and she does some dramatic movies here and there. But she's always just very likable, Jennifer Aniston. I'll
give her due and say that in Horrible Bosses, she was a very different version of Aniston.
She was still sexy, Jennifer Aniston. That's my main problem with that movie was her relationship with Charlie Day.
I'm going to challenge you on that. Unbelievable. I've never found Jennifer Aniston sexy. I think she's cute.
The way she looks, and I think she's cute cute and sexy. Kind of. Mm. They have
Drew
a crossroads for me.
Barrymore's cute. She's not sexy.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes there is a crossroad. Okay. There's a cross section there for me, Brian. That's kind of a sweet spot. But like, what was that movie she was in with Jake Gyllenhaal, which I saw? Like, that's her doing dramatic, but she's doing Jennifer Aniston dramatic. You know what I mean?
Yeah. She was in Office Space, obviously. I don't know. I can't think of the. It wasn't Enemy, was it?
No.
What was it?
Yeah, he was a failed writer, and they worked at
Nocturnal. No, that was Amy Adams.
They worked at a supermarket. What was that called?
Oh, I do kind of remember that.
All right.
Anyway.
Yeah, but Jennifer Aniston does Jennifer Aniston all the time.
Nightcrawler.
It was not Nightcrawler. I'll find out and I'll let you know before the show's over. Oh, it was Office Space.
Oh, that makes more sense.
The Good Girl. Was it The Good Girl? I think it was The Good Girl.
Fuck that is.
Yeah, it was The Good Girl.
Huh.
It was The Good Girl. Written by Mike White. Mike White's also in it.
Ah, how fun.
Here's the good girl. A discount store clerk strikes up an affair with a stock boy who considers himself the incarnation of Holden Caulfield, and he's just a failed writer, and not a good writer, and she was doing a little drama there.
Okay.
Drama romance.
Did it work?
Yeah, it was a very forgettable movie. I couldn't even remember the name of it.
Good Girl. Number four for me.
Very different from The Good Place.
Number four for me. Oh, speaking of good, this is one of the few performers, male or female, who when they're on screen, I'm in. I light up immediately. I first discovered her in Girls Trip. Tiffany Haddish. Mm. Tiffany Haddish is fantastic. Now, maybe I'll look foolish in 10 years, Anderson, because she's only been on the scene for a few years. But as of now, she's a great one-trick pony. Like, she does the Tiffany Haddish thing. It's goddamn hilarious. I love her on screen. She's magnetic. I was about to say I'll see anything with her, but I certainly will not, because there have been several movies that come out that I have an interest in. That said, if I do stumble across her in a movie, or if I would consider seeing almost any movie with Tiffany Haddish. Let's put it this way.
You got a lot to choose from.
Let's put it this way. If she's in a movie, I will give a movie that I would never think twice about at least a second thought. I'm like, Tiffany Haddish is in it. But God, she is goddamn delightful. I love her. You know who I'm talking about.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah.
Do you see Girls Trip?
I did not.
You're not missing much. It was pretty overrated. People went nuts for it. I think I made a ton of money in the box office.
I saw her in Keanu. Pretty,
yeah.
She was in Keanu, which I saw. Keanu.
She's great.
About the kitten.
And even in bad movies, Uncle Drew was on HBO and I was watching about him. This is fucking terrible. But she was delightful.
I've heard her, you know, she's everywhere. I've heard her in a number of interviews and, like, you know, on TV and stuff. But I think that's the only movie I've seen of hers. Yeah.
Mm, she's great.
Mm-hmm. My buddy Joe Dorville might be listening to this, and he's going to be like, you know why you only saw one of her movies, Anderson? Because you're a fucking racist. Hey, Joe, I'm not. You know that.
She is the best part of Girl Trip by far, possibly the only consistently redeeming part.
All right. Aubrey Plaza is my next one.
Ah.
I'm going straight to it.
Yeah.
Aubrey, she's kind of new on the scene. She's the youngest one I have on my list.
Maybe this list will look dumb in 10 years, but as of now, I'm on board.
I have not seen her really stretch her wings. She tried to, and I can point to Ingrid Goes West, but she's still doing that Aubrey Plaza thing. Much like George Clooney, he'll do different kinds of movies, but he's George Clooney in that different kind of movie.
She's kind of like, who's the one with the big eyes? Zooey Deschanel, or it's like...
Zooey's another one that's on my short list.
She's always kind of standing outside the scene, like ironically kind of commenting on it, you know, like she's not, I've never really bought her as like anything other than Aubrey Plaza.
Yeah, she's almost like the surrogate snarky audience member.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. And that's not a great thing when you're trying to be an actress
and
trying to convince someone you're another character.
Been in so much stuff, but you know, she's really good at giving that like awkward.
Yes, she has a persona.
And she's right. She stays in her lane. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason why I put her on my list is I think that perhaps Ingrid Goes West, which I really enjoyed. Have you seen Ingrid
No.
Goes West? I think that was
put
her trying
list.
To get out of her comfort zone, but she did not. Well, maybe she wasn't directed to, but she still seemed like Aubrey Plaza. So that was the nail in the coffin to be on this list for me. Tell me if you think I'm wrong, and I'll tell you why I'm right. All right.
Number three for me. Came to me late. I thought about it and I was like, you know what? Even though I think she might be quietly a very good actress, past her prime and not getting the roles she once got, but in her day, underrated. Demi Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Demi Moore was always sort of cast as
I'm not
going to
give you her.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, give me your example of her range.
I'm drawing a blank on the name. The war movie. The boot camp movie.
Oh, G.I. Jane.
G.I. Jane. Yeah, she was a different
person.
But
she was always a ball buster. She was a ball buster in A Few Good Men.
She can play demure, though. She can play...
Can she?
Yeah, she can play. She's not always a ball.
I guess in Ghost, busty. She was a little bit demure. But, like, she's never... Has she ever been funny? Has she ever said or done anything funny on screen? She's the Russell Crowe of...
Well, you've seen that picture of her naked? And I'm not joking. Like, there's a picture of her, like, naked, and, like, she's got a lot going on down there. Like, a lot.
Going on down there?
Yeah, like, you know, like nowadays,
like a big pubic area.
Yeah.
Really?
It looks like she's got like elf and a leg lock.
Oh,
yeah, and that's kind of funny.
That's crass.
That was kind of funny though.
Oh, I see where you're going with that.
Well, not what I just said was funny, but that picture is kind of funny. I remember Mike Catherwood showed it to me years ago.
If I'm gonna give you George Clooney, you got to give me Demi Moore.
No, I don't. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to do anything I want.
Any more naked.
Like, what was it? She was definitely demure in St. Elmo's Fire, if I recall.
The demure thing I'm coming back on, because in Ghost, she was definitely demure. Oh, my. Oh.
You see the picture? You look at that picture? G.I. Jane.
Wait, that's not real.
G.I. Jane. It might not be, but it's out there. G.I. Jane, and it's funny. G.I. Jane, she was, she shaved her head. I know that helped her a lot, but I just, I forgot she was Demi a few times. I did.
Really?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, to me, she's always the same version, not a different version of herself. That sounds like we're going against what we're talking about. But you know,
she's in a lot of shit that I don't see. She was in something called LOL, Very Good Girls, Forsaken, Wild Oats,
Rough
Night.
Are these all recent movies?
These are all movies of the last 5 years. Blind. She's in Empire now. Her daughter.
Is she Demi Moore?
Love, Sinia. These are all like Love, Sinia's 2018. Animals, that's a TV series. Corporate Animals.
All right, well, tell me, listeners, if I'm off base here. But the more I thought about it, the more I was like, yeah, Demi is always kind of Demi.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this must have already come out because I know this poster. All right. Here we go. Number 3 for me.
Okay.
Oh, I love her. But she does the exact same fucking thing in every movie. Rosie Perez.
Oh, good call.
Rosie fucking Perez.
Yeah, she's always she's a tough chick for the
Billy, no. Billy, please. I love it. I love what she does. And I would like to see it more. Oh, she'd be great like in Clam Oz. I don't know why she never made it.
That was a real natural fit, yeah.
She would have been great in there. They went with mostly unknowns in Orange is the New Black, which I stopped watching because that last season was just, it just didn't grab me. But whether it's she's playing Gloria Clemente in White Men Can't Jump, or she's in Fearless, which just came up a few weeks ago, Untamed Heart. Oh, love that movie. That's been on a list. She is always Rosie.
All the Spike Lee stuff.
Yeah. Rosie.
Do the Right Thing.
Mm-hmm. So Rosie Perez is my number 3.
Even she was she had a small role in Pineapple Express. She was still just kind of Rosie Perez.
Rosie.
And delightful, by the way. Good choice. Are you taking a break?
Yeah, coming up next.
Bro. Coming up next, we will count down and complete our list of the top 5 one-trick ponies for the actresses. And did you watch the NCAA final?
I did not.
Oh, it was exciting. Went to overtime.
Yeah.
First time since 2007.
I heard a lot of good things about it.
It was a good game. Went to overtime. The madness is over, but the excitement of April sports, Anderson, is huge. At betonline.ag, you can bet on baseball. Baseball's just started. The NBA playoffs are days away.
Mm-hmm.
And the Masters, one of the biggest golf events of the year, if not the biggest, is this weekend. Get in on all the action. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag. Use a promo code podcast. What is the promo code?
Podcast1.
O-N-E. For your 50% welcome bonus. Yes, you can get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit at podcast1. With a code podcast1 at betonline.ag.
So you put like $100 in there and they give you a bonus $50.
That's right.
Yeah.
50 just for signing up.
I did it. I saw it happen with my own eyes.
Oh, nice. Just for using the code. You can also text BETNOW, BETNOW, to 238-669. That's 238-669. That will also get you the 50% welcome bonus, or use that podcast1 code.
Podcast.
At betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back. Let's count down the top 2, Anderson. You ready for this?
I'm ready for this.
I love my number 2. My number 2.
We were saying during the break, I forgot that Rosie Perez came out of In Living Color. I had completely forgotten. I just looked at her credits and I was like, oh yeah, look at that.
That's right.
Who knew? We all did at one point, but now we forgot.
Wasn't she a Lakers cheerleader too? I think Paula Abdul. Because Paula Abdul was also a flight. I think she was dance coordinator for the flight.
J-Lo was actually on Loveline years and years and years ago. As a Laker dancer. Like they brought in like 3 or 4 Lakers dancers.
It was her?
Yeah, and it was before my time. But yeah, J-Lo was on.
No kidding.
And then she went on to become...
Very, very popular.
Jenny from the Block.
Indeed. Well, she was always Jenny from the Block. That's the song. Don't be fooled by the rocks that I got. I'm still Jenny from the Block.
I'm okay with not knowing that title or the lyrics in it, Brian. Now I know them.
Don't be fooled by the rocks that I got. The rocks being diamonds.
Diamonds, yes. Yeah, I get
jewels,
it, Brian. Yeah.
Jewels.
Mm-hmm. I think most of them are fake.
Number 2. I'm a huge fan of Jane Lynch. She improves every movie that she's
call.
In. She's a every movie. She's like comedy MVP. Like you put her in your movie, it's instantly better. It's just a little bit better if Jane Lynch is in there. And I much like Tiffany Haddish, I light up whenever she's on screen. I'm like, oh, fantastic! Jane Lynch is in this. She's great. I don't know. I'm trying to think, what's the movie, have you seen a movie that, what's the movie you've seen that she's been in the most in? You know what I mean? Like that had the most Jane Lynch. Was it 40-Year-Old Virgin?
I don't know.
That's a small part. She had like five scenes. My point is, I don't know. I'm trying to think if she's like.
I see her mostly in TV. There's not that many movies that I see her in, but because they're not really movies for me that she ends up being in.
You saw her in The Hammer.
I saw her in The Hammer.
And she was great in The Hammer.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Anyway, comedy MVP. She's
got so many credits. She has almost 200 credits.
Love her. Everything she's in gets a little better. That's hard to do. Jane Lynch.
What is she most Jane Lynch in for you?
What I'm trying to say is what movie has she like has she appeared most in? All I can think of right now off the top of my head is 40-Year-Old Virgin, but I'm sure there's been movies where she's
role
been
models.
That was not a good movie, but she was good.
Glee. I always think of her as Glee, but she's so much more than Glee. Good call, Brian.
Yeah, Jane Lynch.
Good call.
All right. What's number two?
I'm still kind of ruminating on Jane Lynch that I can't think of more movies that she's in because it's almost all TV, and I'm being proven that as I go through her credits here. Dude, there's very few movies. Very few.
She has a very small part in The Fugitive. Talladega Nights. She's a voice in Wreck-It Ralph. It's fantastic.
And what she's doing? Guess what she's doing? Jane Lynch.
She's doing Jane Lynch
as her voice, yeah,
all over again. She's doing. She did a bunch of those Christopher Guest movies.
Mm-hmm. All right, number two for me. Yep. This is probably the biggest actor for sure. She's the biggest actor on. Is it actor or actress?
Female.
Did
actor.
Did we lose female actress? Actor. When did we stop doing actress?
I don't think so. No, because they still say best actress.
Do they?
Yeah, best actress in a supporting role.
Best female actor in a supporting role?
No, best actress.
All right. She's the by far the biggest, heaviest hitter on my list. And
she's
she is number two.
More of your list.
And it's Julia Roberts. Julia Roberts, she does comedy. She does romantic comedy. She does drama. But she's always Julia Roberts. The most that I think
even
I
even is Aaron Brockovich?
Seeing her stretch would be Aaron Brockovich and Osage County, mm-hmm. right? Those are probably the two where I saw her you know, use her acting chops the most, but a lot of time it feels like she doesn't even have to use her acting chops. She can just rely on being Julia Roberts, which works.
Wasn't she in one of those Malevolent movies or one of those things? I don't know.
Did you ever see
the one where she was Mary
Riley? That's also why perfect exercise because to truly do this, we need to have seen every single
that's
thing.
That,
you know, we need to be Elvis Mitchell, and neither one of us are. So.
I'm the white Elvis Mitchell.
Steel Magnolias.
He's the black Brian Bishop.
Which she did right before Pretty Woman. But she's so Julia Roberts, she can't escape herself. Going back to the George Clooney thing, like he can't escape himself.
She's another one, like Drew Barrymore, where I'm not sure if she's a great actress, but she is a great movie star. Like she's magnetic on screen. You want to see her in more things.
And you know what? Aaron Brockovich, she was a little bit almost scary, and I might have forgotten that it was Julia Roberts in a couple scenes, but then I'd go back and go, oh yeah, look, it's Julia Roberts, because her sweet side still would come out.
Right.
She can't help it. Yeah, she can't help it.
Girl can't help it.
All right, what's your number one?
Rosie Perez.
Oh, is it really? Number I'm one. Sorry to step on you like that, buddy.
That's a good choice. First crossover. A legit excellent actress with limited range. Oscar nominated for Fearless, by the way. So he's the only Oscar nominated actress on my list. But Rosie Perez is an excellent, excellent actress with, albeit limited range, but when she does the Rosie Perez thing, it's excellent. I got no quibbles.
All right. Holmes. Well, then here we go. My number one. The one that I discussed at the beginning of the program and I was kind of teasing you with. She just does that thing and she shows up in many trailers and I could almost put money on the fact that when she's doing this in her head, what she's hearing is, yes, it is me, Helena Bonham Carter.
No.
It is me.
You think she has
it is
limited,
I.
You think she has limited
she's
range?
She's always the same, like weirdo, freaky, isn't it? I got a wild look in my eye.
That's how the characters are written.
All of her characters.
I don't know, man.
She's pigeonholed badly, and I don't know if it's Tim Burton's fault, but I've never seen her do anything other than, it is me. Aren't I crazy?
I think she has a lot of range.
She's almost like a modern-day Ally Sheedy.
I mean, she's very different in Fight Club than she is in Big Fish, than she is in, like, you know, all the...
She's always
all
got
the sort
that,
of Remains of the Day
that
type
Helena
shit.
That Helena Bonham Carter thing going on, which is... Like, I am the only one that is like this. It is me. I am my own thing.
I guess I guess I'll meet you halfway and say she definitely has a sort of aura that sort of transcends all of her roles.
But, and it involves wide eyes.
But she is a wide-eyed person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She should have starred in Big Eyes. I like her.
I like her a lot.
I don't love her. Uh-huh. And I might avoid a movie that, because like if she's, especially her and Tim Burton are like hooking up, I'm like, I've seen that.
I will say, okay, I guess Tim Burton uses
I did
her
like Sweeney Todd, though. I did like Sweeney Todd.
Yeah.
And she was good in Sweeney
Todd.
She
was also great in a very small role in Les Mis as the innkeeper, Sacha Baron Cohen's wife at the inn.
Yeah, she's
master of the ass.
She's doing Helena Bonham Carter.
Yeah.
That's my number one. All right. Sorry if you don't agree there, bud, but because you're wrong.
It's the only one I'm going to challenge you on is Helena Bonham Carter.
It's because you're just wrong.
Helena
Bonham Carter. Yes.
So do you have the listener list?
I do.
Thanks to who?
Chad Yuki. Chad, he kind of had this week off because...
He compiled it last week.
Oh, shit.
What? Did you delete it?
I'm looking at the list and it's very similar to mine and I didn't realize that because I'd done this list last week the listeners.
Oh, no.
Oh, no is correct. I don't like lining up with the listeners to this extent. Number five for the listener, which I definitely disagree with, is Charlize Theron.
Oh, I disagree with that.
Yeah, she's got range, bitches. Then you got the number four for the listeners, Sandra Bullock. Blindside, she kind of did a thing, right? She's a little bit different. She's got a couple different gears.
Yeah, a limited range, but a little bit of range.
I 100% agree with their top three, though, which is Rosie Perez in the three spot. Number two is Aubrey Plaza. Number one, Helena Bonham Carter. Helena Bonham Carter. I didn't know that I lined up with the fucking listeners on Helena Bonham. So it's me and the listeners versus Brian, I guess, on the Helena Bonham Carter.
Wow, apparently I've been outvoted.
Helena.
Do you have an extensive also-rans?
No, I'm leaving it at that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I have close to making my list was Rebel Wilson.
Okay.
Rebel Wilson is literally always Rebel Wilson, whatever she does. Who else? Not as thorough of a list, but Aubrey Plaza was on there. Goldie Hawn was very close to making my list. She's always Goldie Hawn to some extent. If Joan Rivers was in more movies, maybe I would have considered her, but Whoopi Goldberg.
Rachel McAdams is on my also rans.
Yeah. She did great in Mean Girls, and she's a delightful rom com star. So.
Zoe Deschanel, yeah. Melissa McCarthy would have been just as recently as last year, and before I saw Won't You Ever Forgive Me,
right?
And then you showed that she is capable of slipping out of herself. Who else? Yeah, that's it. Kristen Wiig, but I've seen her do some dramatic stuff.
Oh, that's right.
The twins, the skeleton twins.
Wasn't she in the one where she does this TV show about herself?
Yes.
That was dark.
It was dark and interesting, dark. But she was still doing. She's got the same thing Will Ferrell's got going on, where she still kind of slips into that.
Right.
Kate McKinnon would be on this list, but she hasn't been in enough movies. But she is always the same, even though she does characters very effectively on a sketch show called Saturday Night Live. She's always Kate McKinnon doing a silly thing.
I like that.
You know what I mean?
All right, let's gamble and get the hell out of here.
All right, so let me get back to where we were. Where are we? Last week, we gambled on Shazam. I guessed 85. Brian, you guessed 81.
Damn it.
And I'm going to the Giovanni.
It's like low 90s, right?
Result for last week's gambling. There it is. Needlessly elaborate. Shazam is currently at 91%. It's funny, he copy and pasted Needlessly Elaborate a bunch in the beginning of the email so that I wouldn't be able to see it.
So it doesn't show up.
Because you called him Needlessly Elaborate a couple weeks ago, so I like that Gio.
That's pretty funny.
I love that Gio.
Thanks, Gio.
One day I'll meet Gio in person.
You never met him?
It's crazy I've never met him, no.
I've met him a dozen times.
So, this week, movie for gambling. Oh, well, first of all, I need to assign you a film.
Yes, you do.
Let me look at my phone here.
What was the one that just came up?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to do that.
You're inspired.
Aubrey Goes West.
Yeah, Aubrey Goes West. That's right.
Yeah.
Good call.
Movies for Bribery. Here we go. Little Children. Now, a lot of people are emailing me saying that I assigned that to you a few weeks ago and you never paid it off.
Is that true?
I think that might be wrong. I think I started to and then I pulled back.
Yeah, I think we did something else.
Do a Little Children. It's really one of my favorite movies from the last 10, 15 years.
Right.
And I could see it being like a running thing on this year program. Same with Calvary. But that's... You need to see both of those, but see Little Children because it's just I had this thought while watching Little Children all those years ago. Todd Fields did it. He doesn't do nearly enough, that Todd Fields. I was thinking, like, this is good enough. It could have been like a long form TV show. Like, it could have been 15, 20 episodes. The characters are rich, deep. The little community, the world building, the small little community is great. Oh, I love that. Little children. Huh? And has one of the funniest inappropriate scenes I've ever seen involving the pool, which I've talked about.
Oh, you have talked about it. It's very, very upsetting.
Little children, I don't know if it's streaming anywhere, though.
I'll find it.
Kate Winslet and Jennifer Connelly. Todd Field directs. He wrote. Patrick Wilson's also in this. I like that Patrick Wilson. He doesn't have a ton of range, but I like him.
Little Children, 2006.
All right, so this week.
I got to spend money on this shit.
This week we will be gambling
outrageous.
Ooh. All right. The Man Who Killed Don Quixote. It's finally coming out.
Isn't there a bigger film coming out?
Hellboy, Missing Link.
I don't like you choosing.
Well, okay. I was going to say all five. He gave me five separate movies to choose from. So, all right, Hellboy. You want to do Hellboy? That's what he has listed number one.
I just want to do I think this
one. You want to do the one that you know the score of?
That's exactly right. I want to do the one that people have heard of.
Everyone's heard of The Man Who Killed Don Quixote. And if you haven't, here's what it is. It's Terry Gilliam's lost film. He made the documentary that many of you have seen called Lost in La Mancha a number of years ago. And it was very depressing to anyone who aspired to make a film of their own one day. And when you see a behemoth such as Terry Gilliam having it just snatched away from him by producer studios and the inclement weather. And he's finally finished it here. It's like 20 years of making.
We can do this one if you want to. I think there'll be a narrower range. I think we'll probably know where it's going to end up. Whereas Hellboy, nothing would surprise me. Nothing.
Do you want to do Hellboy? Because in defense of the Geo system, he had number one as Hellboy, thinking that would be the smartest one to go with. And then number two was Missing Link. Number three was The Man Who Killed. But I was most intrigued with The Man Who Killed.
Let's just do the one people are most familiar with. I mean, people like to play at home. You know what I mean? People like to play along at home.
You're thinking for yourself.
I am.
People like a challenge too, Brian.
True. Yeah. But we could probably agree that
all right, so Hellboy.
Does he send the scores in a separate email?
I get three separate emails from him.
So do I.
Oh. Don't open, Brian.
Oh, interesting.
All right, let's do Hellboy.
It's a high score. Higher than I would have thought.
Brian, stop it.
Hellboy. Tell your Hellboy story.
No.
Hellboy.
All right. I got my score.
I'll tell you mine if you tell me your Hellboy story.
I used to refer to Danny Bonaducci as Hellboy because he had fiery red hair.
He was always smoking.
And he was always smoking and, reddish complexion, as we all know, Danny Bonaducci. And he also wore like lifts and heels, like his shoes, because he had an inferiority complex from being a little dude. That's why I think a lot of his behavior and his regiment, his workout regiment was about, is because he was small in stature. So I did notice a few weeks after working in the same building as him that he always had heels on his shoes. So I dubbed him Heel Boy, and it was when Guillermo del Toro was first releasing Hellboy all those years ago. And then we're going to hear all these in those shows from that era.
Oh,
but we'd just be in the middle of the show, and I'm like, oh, fuck, there's Heel Boy. Oh, there he is. Did he ever come in?
Yeah, one time he poked his head in and like yelled at us or something.
I remember like we were trying to have a meeting weird. And he was talking about, he came up with, he was always such a 70s like gimmicky like radio jock, you know. He'd be like, here's what it is, we're gonna do perfect push-ups on top of moving buses in LA, it's gonna be great, perfect push-ups.
I forgot about that.
And we're like, we're trying to have a meeting in here,
Donnie Wahlberg.
My number is 53.
Shit, if it's close to that you're cheating, because I guess 76.
Brian, I have no idea. Here's what I know. Guillermo del Toro has nothing to do with this.
But it's like a reboot. It's like a new Hellboy. It's like a new...
But it's still him.
I think it's also rated R.
It's still him.
I should actually know who's directing this movie. Do we know?
Damn it. I will in a second.
I should have knew that.
Why don't you look it up?
I looked up a score already, so I don't want to look anything else up.
All right.
76 is my number. 76. I went high thinking they might...
I thought you already said something and it wasn't 76.
No, it said 76. Because I said, damn it, I said 76.
Where is the fucking... I guess we can just look it up.
Isn't there a separate email?
Current score for this week's gambling. Here we go. Hellboy, Hellboy is... I don't know. It's not showing me. I don't think there is. There isn't one. No
there,
score.
There is no score?
I believe... Well, as of when he sent me this email. Here, let me look it up on my app here. Hellboy.
Hellboy.
I'm sure this
if there's no score, that's a bad sign.
Brian, yeah, no shit. Hellboy Sword of Storms. Is that what it's called?
No.
Christ. This is the low point of the entire show. All right, Hellboy, here it is. 9%.
Nine? No, you say 99 or nine?
Nine.
Oh, no.
It's never a good sign when a new director comes on to something. Neil Marshall is the guy that directed it.
76.
Nine.
Has anyone run off by 60-something points before?
That's terrible.
Oh, brutal.
Oh, you know what? I didn't even realize that that wasn't the same Hellboy.
Damn it.
I thought it was what's-his-fuck.
Perlman?
From City of, yeah, Ron Perlman.
No, it's fucking, God damn it.
All right. That's all she wrote.
9%.
9%. I haven't seen one in single digits in quite some time.
Shit.
I had some other stuff I want. Oh, final bit of business here, and it's perfect to do this at the end of the show. Only fair to you because I did this live on a live to tape on the After Disaster last night. I've been talking to you for the last couple weeks about raising money for a good friend of mine who's raising money for leukemia to put a stop to leukemia. You know, there's always all these people raising money against horrific things.
I know.
My producer of Groupers, his name's Max Lanworth, great guy. Mm. He's been put in a position to raise some money, a shit ton. Like what's on his shoulders is quite a bit. He let me know about it. And I said, let me get creative and think of some things. So what we're going to do is we're going to sell raffle tickets, right? Raffle tickets, $10, as many raffle tickets as you like. This isn't official yet, but I got to cross it past you. And if you win, if you're chosen from the hat of all the raffle tickets, all the money will go straight to this leukemia, against leukemia. It's always weird when people are talking about the cancer things and they go, yeah, it's all for leukemia. Well, we don't want it to be for leukemia. Right. We want it against leukemia. The winner will get to hang out. Come to Los Angeles and hang out with you, with Mike Carano.
I don't know about this.
With Tyler White, with my buddy Greg, and I bowling. We're going to bowl. We're going to hang out. Wow. We're going to have some pops. It's going to be a good time. We're going to talk movies. We're going to talk about all sorts of shit. Are you into that? Will you do that in the name of anti-cancer?
What's the charity?
I don't have any of the information.
I'm going to need some details.
He's going to give us all the info and set up our own page once you
for leukemia?
Say yes.
For leukemia?
It's against leukemia, yes.
I don't have anything against leukemia. I guess I'll do it.
Okay, cool. All right, that's it. That's all the business that I got.
Bowling's the worst.
Bowling? Well, you don't have to bowl then. Just sit there.
Sit there and have some pops. Kendrick Burr.
Yeah, I think I might do it at the Highland Bowl, which is fucking sweet. Like,
sweet,
it's from like 1914.
It's pretty
sweet,
actually.
Yeah.
Wait, is that the one that's at the Hollywood and Highland Center?
No.
Oh.
It's very different.
Highland Bowl.
You got to like this, though. It's like hipster joint, but it's like really cool.
Style?
They restored it, I should say, from like its original grandeur. All right, let's get the fuck out of here.
Let's get out of here. Let's call up the listener art and all the details for this week. Ba-ba-ba. Let's see the listener art. Who's responsible?
It's a good one.
Who's responsible for this?
Chad. Not Drake.
Drake,
he did one a couple weeks ago for us as well. This one's good. This one's a GIF. Not sure how this is going to work.
I mean, it'll work just fine as a freeze frame. There's not much going on in this GIF.
I like the GIF though. I like the way it looks, but it's Homer related, and I guess that's a line from The Simpsons.
That's right.
I asked him because I didn't remember that line.
No, Homer was like judging. There was like a film festival, and one of them was.
You remember? Yes, I remember.
That's right. That was a film
football
festival.
Football in the groin. Okay, let's get out of here.
Thanks, Drake. That's very clever. Good stuff. Thanks to our feature artists this week: Skittish, The Ocean as Mistress, Vega Nova, and Big Folk. Check us out on Patreon. You guys know all the details by 9%.
Now. 9%.
Jesus. The Patreon. Directors we'd most like to see a new film from is our top five this month for the Patreon, available now. That's right. Clockwork Orange Sniff Tracks coming soon. Are we drinking?
Yeah, we're going to be drinking.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, you can play a drinking game with Clockwork Orange and us on this episode.
Run.
First Sniff Tracks in years. This will be our number four for all time.
That's right.
Yeah, fourth one we've done.
Do us a favor and click through the Amazon banner for any shopping needs you might have. It costs you nothing. It's free for you and helps us. I see it as a win-win. Check us out, The Film Vault, Facebook, Twitter, and Patreon. And until next time,
we do it, the Van Gogh.